This week is Parshas Truma, and Truma, if a person wants to study Truma on the Pshat level, which means just the basic understanding, I think that books of this nature, maybe some of you have seen them, are essential, because these are artistic renderings of the different vessels and the items that are in the Mishkan, and the way in which, and these are different books, so they're slightly different in terms of their, the artistic rendering, we'll just leave it at that, but they are very helpful. Now, the Aris Kol Chumash, for example, does give pictures. If you look, for example, on page 447 and 449 and 451, right, you just turn the pages, you see that it gives their own small, picture, and then continuing on 457, where you see there the crushim, the planks, they call them, I often call them the beams, but the planks which make up the walls of the Mishkan. And then the last image, in the last two images rather, in our Parsha, are 461, the Mizbeach, and 463, which kind of gives you an overall picture of the courtyard with a little bit about the Mishkan, but not really demonstrating for you the Mishkan itself in detail. The benefit of a book of this nature, for example, this Melechas HaMishkan, which I have in Hebrew, but it was also published in English, and I think in French, probably Spanish. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it was done in different ways, in different languages, rather. But it shows how it shows you details in a much more, many different angles and many different ways. So this is just an overview. I don't really want to go through the details of the making of the Mishkan, but you can see how there are 20 krashim, which make up a wall. There are poles which go through. There are sockets on the bottom, and there are these linking rings, which they show you how they link at the top, which would hold together the building that we call the Mishkan. This is what it would look like with the sides, and you can't see the back here, but you'll see the back from an overview. These are curtains which were made for the entranceway of the Mishkan. Here's the what's called the paroches, the division between the holy and the holy of holies, the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which was behind. In the holy of holies, you have the ark. So this is an overhead view. The poles of the ark, the badim, are a little exaggerated here, but they would go the full length of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Here you could see a mini model of the Shulchan, but it's missing some of the details. Here's the menorah, and the small Mizbeach would be placed in front of it. So you get a real sense of how things were placed. You'll note, of course, once you understand the measurements, that this was not a very large room. And the reason why it didn't need to be a large room in the Mishkan, and the traveling edifice that we have here, is because only a few people, a handful of people, would enter this room, namely the Kohanim. And how many Kohanim were there in the wilderness? Well, first there were five, and then there were three, because Nadav and Avihu died. So that's that. Now, once we get past the actual building, we get to the thing which I really want to focus on today, which are the covers. So you'll see that there are three covers, one which was ornate and woven and very well designed, a second one which was goatskin covering, and then a third one in which there's a debate as to what it looked like. So this is the ornate and the well-woven, and you'll see that but there are black lines over here. That's because this was originally made of five longer strips which were sewn together. I guess it depends on how big your loom is to be able to make something like this together. So you could make a strip like this. The length is always, that could be as long as you want. But as far as the width goes, you can only go the width of the loom, and then you need to, Freudian slip, and then you need to sew them together. So that's the way they would do that. So there were five here and five here, and they were linked together with these loops and clasps, which were, I believe, made out of gold. Okay, and that's the main cover of the Mishkan. Now, why do I say the main cover of the Mishkan? We're going to see the Psukim soon, but if you are in the Mishkan, if you're inside, and only the Kohanim, but if you're in the Mishkan, so what's your roof? I shouldn't say what's your roof. What's your ceiling? This is your ceiling. Because if you recall the images of the Mishkan before, it's open because there isn't a physical roof that we might call. You don't have beams holding anything up. It's just draped over, and it's held up. I mean, I guess you could say it's held up. It's supported a little bit in the middle by these beams, which hold up the parochas, the kodesh for the kodesh hakodeshim, for the holy of holies. But it's really just draped over those two sides. That's what you have. And again, maybe there's support over here in the front and in the middle where the kodesh hakodeshim is. But that's what you have. And it doesn't come down all the way to the bottom. So you could see a little bit of gold. You could see a little bit of silver. Except that what went on top of that was another cover. Another cover made out of goat skins. And this one was a little longer. I don't know if you can count it or if you can see it from where you are. But this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the top sewn together. And then on the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Which meant that this one was a little longer than the previous one. So now when you see it draped over, note how you can't see the other one at all. Okay, this covers it all, and it even goes further down, where you might not even be able to see the socket so well, the silver adanim, the things which held up the planks, which made up the walls. Then there is one other cover, which is debated as to what it looked like, whether it draped down like you see in this picture, or whether it was just a cover, simply a cover across the top, and really what you saw on the sides was the goatskin, you know, drapery. Okay, that's the overall Mishkan. And then, you know, this book continues and talks about the chatzer and the vessels of the Mishkan, the internal vessels, what they actually look like and how they're made. And anybody who wants to look at this, you know, you're more than welcome to. It's always been helpful to me, and so I bring it here to show you. And this book does the same thing, but I think this one actually follows the order of the way things are presented in the Torah. It starts with the vessels. Yeah, it starts with the vessels, and then it goes into the Mishkan, as I just showed you. Okay, so now what I want to do is show you a few things in the Psukim to help us get a greater understanding of the concept of the Mishkan on a deeper level. Okay, in other words, when we look at those pictures and we understand the imagery and we get a feeling and a sense of what was going to be built, so we understand, okay, it's a place for service of God. Service of God is primarily done through sacrifices, the karbanot, the sacrificial order, and the ways in which people do that, which is not to preclude the idea of tefillah and prayer and connecting to God on a personal and individual basis. There are tefillos which are mentioned in the Torah on a number of different occasions. There are blessings which people give to others mentioned in the Torah on a number of occasions. And all of that is well and good. But most of the commentaries and the Midrash, when discussing the Parsha of Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, and Pekudei, which are the Parshas primarily dedicated to the instruction for the Mishkan, the gathering of the funds for the Mishkan, putting it all, and the supplies for the Mishkan, putting it all together, and then erecting the whole thing. So the commentaries look at this and say, okay, that's all very nice. For a one-time instruction, that is a lot of what we might call modern parlance screen time for something which we're not doing anymore. Okay, in other words, this Mishkan was instructed for a particular time and place. What's the particular time? After the Exodus. What's the particular place? The wilderness, until the building of a base Hamikdash, a temple in a specific spot, in the place that God will choose. The place that God will choose, HaMakom HaShev HaShem, is the phraseology which is used in the Torah in Devarim chapter 12 to indicate that there will be a place. And of course, we know that place to be the Temple Mount, Yerushalayim. Okay, that's where the Beis HaMikdash was to be built. And once that's built, what do you need a Mishkan for? The answer is, you don't. And since you don't need a Mishkan, you don't need these instructions beyond a specific time and place. So why does the Torah give so much attention to it? If the Torah, you think God didn't know that this was going to be timeless? You think Moshe didn't know this is going to be the guidebook for the Jewish people for thousands of years? So if that's the case, why so much time? Say, God gave me the instructions, I told it over to the people, they all know what I'm talking about, and we built it. Shkayach, that's it. Now everybody's going to enjoy the Torah reading because it's only going to be 5 psukim. Very nice. Doesn't have to just take an hour and a half or whatever, however long it takes. So why? So all the, I mean, many of the commentaries, meaning the ones that go beyond pshat, trying to explain, oh, this is what the menorah looked like, what the ark looked like. They focus on what this is supposed to be for each individual. And that's and the key verse, which is not only most often discussed, but it appears in many a synagogue, including ours, on a dedication wall. Okay, take a look at the last verse on page 444. V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'socham, which means that you are going to make for me a mikdash, what's a mikdash? A sanctuary, and I will dwell amongst b'socham, amongst them, amongst you guys. Okay, and many of the commentaries, especially the Hasidic masters, were big fans of saying that you're going to make for me a mikdash and I will live in them, meaning in the people. That each person's body has to become a source of sanctification and a source of bringing God in. So now, but now we're faced with a very fundamental question, and that is, we know what the name of this edifice that we're talking about is going to be called. Ha-Mishkan. Right? Ha-Mishkan. So what did the Pasuk just say? V'asu li mikdash. Now literally Mishkan means a dwelling place. Okay? A place where the Shechina, Mishkan, Shechina, can rest. What's a mikdash? It's a holy place. A sanctuary. But guess what happens there? The Shechina is also supposed to rest. The difference, what's the major difference between the Mishkan and the Mikdash? This is not a trick question. It's an easy question. What's the major difference between the Mishkan and the Mikdash? Well, I'm talking about the structure itself. I'm not talking about people entering it. The structure itself. Temporary. Right, exactly. I thought, easy question. Not a trick question. A Mishkan is not only temporary, but it's also... It's you can break it down. There's a word I'm looking for. It's portable. Thank you. Portable. Okay. It's portable. The Mishkan is portable, and the Mikdash is permanent structure. You're not taking down the Mikdash. You're not. I mean, evil people will take down the Mikdash, but it's not meant to be taken down, and it's not meant to be traveling anywhere. And the Mishkan was in several places, even in the land of Israel, after they came into the land before it was finally destroyed, and then the Mikdash was built shortly, I don't want to say shortly, about 100 years after the Mishkan was destroyed. There wasn't a Mishkan. During those times, people had what was called, in Hebrew they call them bamos, and a bama was basically a private mizbeach. You know how like in Brooklyn, everybody has like a little shul in their basement, or wherever they have? So that's what bamos are. I'm not knocking in Brooklyn, there's no base in Mikdash. But that's what it was, and so much so that in a lot of the when the kings of Israel are introduced to us, so in just about every single one, it tells us that either they followed in the ways of their father, which may have been good or may have been bad, and if they were good, it will say that yeah, they were good, but Raka Bamos Lo Saru, they didn't make people take down their private mizbeach. Okay, so people, if they wanted to bring it, now, is it good that people want to have their own shtiebel in their basement? Okay, shtiebel in the basement is not exactly a bama, because a bama is a problem. Right, is it good? So I want to bring a sacrifice, but I don't want to go to Jerusalem, so I'll do it right here. But I'm not bringing it to some idol. This isn't idolatry. I'm bringing it to God. I'm doing it in my own space, and I'm doing it on my own terms, and maybe I'll even get a Kohen to do it, whatever it may be. So is that terrible? Well, in the scheme of... if there's a rule from God that says there's a Beis HaMikdash and this is where you bring your karban and only this place, then yeah, it's a problem. But the thing is that people were used to it for a long time because it wasn't a problem when there wasn't a Mishkan. It wasn't a problem. So now you're going to say, oh, we built a shul in the center of town or in the center of the country. Now you have to go there and you can't do this anymore. Well, there are some people who are going to be like, no, thank you. I'm good. I like it the way that it is. All right. So I'm not going to judge. You know, there are plenty who have judged, and we'll leave that for what it is. But the question here is, you have to make for me a mikdash. Okay, so what is the mikdash? What is the mikdash? If in fact, if you look in the very next pasuk, k'chol asher ani moreh uscha, eis tavnis hamishkan, eis tavnis kol keilav, v'chein ta'asu, everything that I'm showing you of the structure of the mishkan and the structure of all of its vessels, and so should you do, Well, now we're totally lost. We were just told you have to make a mikdash, and now we're told you have to make a mishkan, and that everything I'm going to be instructing you is regarding the mishkan. So, what do we know? So there is a passage in the Gemara that tells us, and I want you to hold the page here because we're going to look at a pasuk. Okay, turn to Bamidbar chapter 10, verse 21. Which is on page 784. Okay, so it's on page 784. Now, know a little bit of background is that the Mishkan, when it was broken down for travel, it was divvied up amongst the different Levi families as to who was going to carry each item, each vessel. So each family is given their instruction to what to carry, and it's divided up. So the Kahas family, that's the family that Aaron and Moshe are from, they are the ones who carry the vessels of the Mishkan. And then you have, I don't remember which group, but it's all described at the end of Parshas Bamidbar and the beginning of Parshas Naso. But I'll quickly check it. I don't remember exactly, but I know the Kahas family they carry the vessels, and then in the beginning of Parshas Naso, we're told that the Gershon family they're the ones who are going to carry the Yirios, in other words, all the different curtains of the Mishkan and the Ohel Moed. That's an interesting phrase. Ohel Moed means the tent of meeting, which is often another word for the Mishkan. And they also carry the curtains of the courtyard. Okay, so all the curtains, that's basically their job. And the Merari family, their job is to carry the kerushim, the planks, the beams, everything that holds up the actual structure of the Mishkan and the chatzer and the courtyard. Okay, so that's how it was divvied up. So now we're on page 784, and we're told v'nasu akhasim nosei mikdash, the Kahas families, who are the carriers of the Mikdash, they would travel, Vekimu es hamishkan ad bo'am, and then they would put up the Mishkan before they arrived. Okay, so there's a Talmudic passage, I don't remember where, but I think it's in Sanhedrin, that says that this pasuk shows that the people of Kahas were carrying the Mikdash, and the Mikdash therefore is a reference to the Ark, to the Aron. So the Mikdash itself is the Aron, and that means that when the pasuk says "V'asu li Mikdash v'shachanti b'socham," that you have to make for me a Mikdash, and I will dwell among you, it means you're going to make the next item, which is going to be instructed, which is the Aron, and then the building is going to be named for that item. Okay, not a crazy thing to do. I was trying to think of a good example of this. So, I mean, an example is that you remember that awful story with Dina, the son of Yaakov? So, who is the guy who perpetrates the crime against Dina? What's his name? Shechem. And what city did he live in? Shechem. So, which came first? Was it named Shechem? And then, was the boy named Shechem and then they named the city Shechem? Because we also have that in the beginning of the Torah, that Cain made a city, and he called it Chanoch after his son Chanoch. So it is not crazy for things to be named after either a person or after an item. And if in fact it is the case that the Aron, the Ark, is the Mikdash, because that's the source of all holiness. What makes the Aron holy more than anything else? What goes into the Aron? You have the Luchos, right? The tablets, broken and full. And you have a Torah placed in there. And whatever else was, you know, Man was placed in there. But the Aron itself is Kodesh. And therefore it's called Mikdash. And so when we understand that idea first and foremost, we understand that the source of the Kedusha of the Mishkan is the Aron itself. And that's why when you go back to page 446... What is the first thing that we are told here in 446? Make the Aron, Asu Aron. Now, why is it called an Aron? Because what is an Aron? It's a box, right? That's what it is. And in fact, if you look at the picture there, and I'll show you even better with the image that they have in here, you'll see that the Aron, not only was it a box, but it was made up of several boxes. Okay, and this is Rashi's explanation for it. This is the way that he depicts it. That there's a gold box on the outside, a wooden box in the middle, and a gold box on the inside. The main box, or what's a box is not made out of gold. The box is made out of wood. But it's covered on the outside with gold, and covered on the inside with gold, so that no matter how you look at it, what are you seeing? Gold. And gold was the key ingredient in everything that's on the inside of the Mishkan. Why? Because you want to beautify this holy space, even though very few people see it, because they're not entering inside, but nevertheless, knowing that it's gold, and that all the donations of gold went to making this. So you see that this is an Aron, and what an Aron is. We call this an Aron. Does that look anything like this? No. Why is it called an Aron? Because it's a box. A differently shaped box, a differently structured box, but it's a box. So it holds the Torah just like this did. And so therefore, what we're describing now is that the definition of the Mishkan, definition of Mikdash, rather, is an ark. Is an ark, yeah.
Is the Aron the Mishkan? I'm a little
confused. No. That the word which is the word Mikdash references the ark, references the Aron. That's what the verse in Ahaloscha that I just looked at. That's what the Gemara says. The Talmud says that you, based on showing us that the sons of Kehas carried the Mikdash. How are they carrying the Mikdash? What is the Mikdash? No, but that's the point. That one of the items which they carried, and arguably the most significant item, because it carries the luchos, is the Aron. And how do they do? You have to understand that there's a catch-22 that you have with the Ark. What's the catch-22? It's inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Holy of Holies. Who's allowed to go into the Holy of Holies? Nobody. The Kohen Gadol on one day of the year. So therefore, nobody's allowed to go in there, essentially, except for on that one day. And so now you have a problem. The problem is, how do you get the Ark into the Kodesh HaKodeshim? Okay? Because you can't get it in there. And the answer is, you put it down, and you build a Mishkan around it. That's what you do. No, they're not going in. They're not going in. The point is that they build the Mishkan around it, and because that's the center of what makes for the Mikdash. Okay? When you're building a structure around an item, that item is pretty special. Okay, because usually what you do, I mean, think, how do you build a house? How do you build a house today? You build a house, you build the walls, and you bring in all the stuff. Okay, I know the kitchen is pretty valuable, but you don't build a kitchen first and build a house around it. You build a house first, and then you bring in all the stuff and make the kitchen. But with the Aron, you have to do it the other way. Yet the Kohen, that's what the Pasuk said. The Kohen would bring in the Mikdash, and then they'd build the Mishkan. That's what the Pasuk said. We just saw that. So that means that the definition of the holiness of this Mishkan is the Mikdash. And what's the Mikdash? The Aron. And so when it says here, Va'atzuli Mikdash, V'shachanti B'socham, so yeah, we can take it esoterically, we could take it into a deeper level, and we could say, any building that you're going to make, which is a Mikdash, and what do we call a shul today? A Mikdash Ma'at, a miniature Mikdash, all fine and good. But in terms of understanding this, it says, Va'atzuli Mikdash, you're going to make an Aron, and the Aron is going to be the center of everything. So now when we take the whole idea of what the Aron represents to the next level, what does the Aron represent? The Aron represents what it's holding. And what is it holding? The Ten Commandments, the Torah. Okay, so that's the source of the holiness of this building. And that's the source of the holiness of this people. I want to show you one, I mean, I wasn't planning to do this, but I'm going to show you one more thing, which I think is rather cool. And it's not just cool, but it's really a beautiful teaching. And that is I got it wrong. The kapores, which is the cover of the ark, is one of the unique examples of where a graven image is actually commanded by God. Okay, we know the Ten Commandments says don't make a graven image. Well, unless God tells you to do so. Okay, so then you can. So we have here is we have these two images, and our understanding is that one of them they have a face on it. One of them was the face of a male, and one of them was the face of a female. And if you actually look at the way that they are described in the Torah, I'll show you the pasuk. Turn to page 448. Page 448. Yeah, they're supposed to look like angels. They're called kruvim, cherubs. So if you look on pasuk 20,
Chaf. Ve'ayu akruvim porsei chenafayim lamala. These kruvim, they have their wings facing, upwards. Sochechim akanfehem ala kaporis. They're basically covering. See the word sochech, sochechim? That's like schach. Everybody knows what schach is, right? Okay, so it's a covering with their wings over the cover of the ark. Ufnehem ishalachiv. The faces are one to the other. Okay, and what's the next line? Ela kaporis yupnei akruvim. That towards the kaporis would be the face of these kruvim. So what does that mean? So here they did it a little wrong, I would say. Actually, my other book does it a little better, because if you look here, you see they're just facing each other. You see how they're facing each other? Are their faces downward? No. Can you see it? Okay, they're facing each other. So in this one, it's actually a little better, because they do have it facing down. I remember. I didn't even look. But here, you could see. You see how in other words, the bodies are facing each other, but where is the face looking? Downward. Okay, towards the kaporis. And towards the kaporis, what's it really looking at? Meaning, if it's facing downward, what's it facing towards? The contents of the Aron, and that's the beautiful imagery of what the Aron is supposed to represent. In other words, here there are, when we see angelic creatures, we want to say, oh, let's be like that. So what's this one doing? They're looking at each other, but so they have that love kind of connection, if you will, from one to the other. But they're also saying, what's guiding me? What's underneath me, in their case, but it means the Torah, the Aseres Dibros, etc. So that's a beautiful image of what Mikdash really is. So when you look at the totality of the Aron, you can understand that hopefully pretty well. Okay, now, I want to show you another couple of things to just further this idea. Look at the very... No, I don't. Okay.
So how do you know which way is right? Is the actual way of it, if there's a difference?
No, so these are artistic renderings. Okay, the question is, in each artist, how well did they stick to the instruction as they read it, or the different interpretation that they put together? I think that at least face-wise, this one is more accurate than the other one because of the pasuk. The pasuk says that they were faced downward. Okay. All right. Now, one more point that I wanted to make, and this is where I got this book beforehand. Divrei Yamim 1, chapter 28. So Divrei Yamim is the book of Chronicles, and it's, according to some, it's the last book of Tanakh. So in this book, it describes how David gathered all of the people. This is Divrei Yamim 1, chapter 28. And it says, Vayakam David HaMelech al-Ragla vayomer shema'uni achai ve'ami. He says, listen, my people. Aniim levavi levnos beis menucha la'aron bris Hashem. He says, I want to build a house of a rest for the Aron, the ark of God's covenant. And remember, David did not build the Beis HaMikdash. Who built the Beis HaMikdash? Shlomo, his son. David bought the land, David laid the groundwork, but he was not able to actually do it. God did not allow him to do it. So he wants to build the house for what? For the ark. He says, La Aron Bris Hashem, for the ark, which is of the covenant, of God's covenant. And when he gives instruction to Shlomo, he says, Aviatash Shlomo Bini, you, my son Shlomo, da, you should know, Es Elohe Avicha, the God of your fathers, you have Deu, serve him properly, believe Shalem with a full heart, uvenefesh chafetza, and with a soul which is clinging in that way. Kechol vavos doresh Hashem, because every heart seeks out God, v'chol yetzer machshavos mevin, and everybody who has an understanding gets it. Into drishanu yimatzei lach, v'im tazvenu yaznichach la'ad. If you seek out God, you'll find what you're looking for. But if you abandon it, not so good. Re'ei, listen, he says, I want you to see. Atan, now, I said with an ayin, ki Hashem v'char b'chal levnos, God has chosen you to build Bayis La Mikdash, a house for the Mikdash. What do you mean a house for the Mikdash? What did David say a few psukim earlier? I want to build a house for the Aron. And he's telling Shlomo, you're going to build a house for the Mikdash. A Bayis La Mikdash. Right? Anyone here familiar with Hebrew? You know how that works? Did I translate that pretty well? Bayis la mikdash, a house for the mikdash. So that's another proof that the idea that the ark being the mikdash and the source of the holiness is clear from the text. Okay. All right. Now, with all that in mind, I want to now take a look at the concept of the Mishkan. What is the Mishkan? Okay. Now, the Mishkan, we're told, let's take a look at 26:1. Okay? Page 452. Now, before we look at that, I just want you to see the verse right beforehand, okay, Pasuk Mem. So you'll see the Pasuk at the very end of the previous chapter, which is right there, page 452. I want you to, the instruction is, I want you to see and do through the form that you're shown on the mountain. Okay, that's referring to what? To everything. Now, as a mishkan ta'asa, you're going to make the mishkan, Eser Yirios, Sheish Mashzar, Uzchelos Vagamon, etc. You're going to make the Mishkan out of 10 curtains, which are going to be woven out of all the materials which are described here, and they're going to be put together. So what's the definition of the Mishkan according to this verse? Is it the physical structure of the building? Or is it that when you're told to make the Mishkan, you're told to make what? The curtain coverings. The curtain coverings. Okay, when you have, let's put it this way. If, now let's talk for a second about how they build a house, okay? Or I mean, maybe we don't all build houses, but we certainly have seen a sukkah being built. Hey, how do you build a sukkah? You put up the walls, and then you put up the roof. Before you put on the roof, do you have a sukkah?
No.
Okay, the definition of the sukkah is the schach. Schach. What's the definition of a house? You build up the walls before a roof. Do you have a house? You have a nice structure, maybe. But you don't have a, you got nothing. Rain's going to come in. Okay, you need to have a roof. And that's why you don't bring anything into that house. You don't put any of the, you don't do the internal trimmings until the roof is on there. So similarly with the Mishkan, the definition of the Mishkan is the curtain covering, first and foremost. Okay? So we see that in Pasuk 1. Now let's turn the page. 456, top of the page, first verse. V'yasisa es hakrashim la mishkan. You're going to make the krashim, the planks, the beams, which are going to be the walls, right? For the mishkan. Why are the beams for the mishkan, in light of what we've just read? Because the beams are going to hold up the mishkan, which is the roof. Which is the roof. Okay? For the curtains to be, right, I mean, they're draped over. Okay, now, there's another pasuk which I want you to see, and I think it's in pasuk, it's in Parashat Pekudei. So let's go there for a second. Yeah, I know, we're going all over the place, I know, but let's take a look now on page, I think it's the end of the perek. No, hold on a second, I'm going to find it. It's on page 520. It's 520 and onto 522. So if you look at the bottom, page 520 in chapter 36. So when it's describing all of the work which was going to go in the detail which was going to go into the creation of all the items of the Mishkan. So you'll see, and again, I use the word Mishkan to describe the overall structure. But just like the Mikdash is the Ark, and what we later call the Beis HaMikdash is in honor of the Ark. Similarly, the Mishkan is defined as the cover, and we call the whole structure based on the cover. Okay, so take a look at the bottom of the page in Revi'i. So it describes, and you can read it in English, how the making of that first cover, the lowest cover, in other words, the one which is woven, the one which is made with all the fine detail, and then sewn together, is put together. So if you look at the very bottom of the page, after describing those two sides, so I'm just going to recall the picture again. Here, so you see this, where it describes
one side here made up of the five lengths, and one side here made up of the five lengths. And then it describes how those two larger pieces, the tapestries, however you want to call them, were hooked together. Now, I don't know if it was done exactly like this. They have a different version or understanding of how the loops were done together. And it says, once these loops were made, look at the last passage on the page. Bayaz Chamishim Karsei Zahav. He made the 50 loops. Bayechaberes Hayirios Achas Elachas Bakrasim. And then he attached the curtains one to the other with these clasps. Vayhi hamishkan echad. Basically, what does that mean? It means that while this and this were separated, the mishkan was not one. It wasn't unified. Once they're together, vayhi hamishkan echad. So what's the deciding factor in what makes this mishkan one? The creation of this long cover for the mishkan. Okay? So now, what's the point? The point is that one of the most important images of the Mishkan that we have is its beauty. But when you think about what the Mishkan looked like, and I'm sorry that I keep opening the book, but I want to show you this. Okay, this is not the pervasive opinion. I think that the more common opinions are that the top cover was this, made out of some kind of animal skin, possibly a giraffe. I mean, it's called Oros Techashim. So what's the Tachash? That's an interesting question. And some are of the view that the Tachash was a giraffe. But what's the main thing that you see when you're looking at the Mishkan from the outside? This covering. Okay, it's a goat covering. Now, what's a goat covering? A goat covering is animal skin, and it's something which is made more than anything, to sustain the kind of temperature, or not temperature, weather that they're going to be faced in the wilderness. Okay, so a sandstorm, maybe every now and then it rains, on very rare occasion. Okay, so that's what this is for. But who's looking at this? Anybody and everybody. What do they see? Ah, it's just another building. Okay, it's no different than all the other tents which are covered with goat skins or whatever animal skins that they're made with. Because the Mishkan is not supposed to be about something which is flaunting and beautiful. In its own way, its beauty is internal. Its beauty is on the inside. And so, yes, it's true that ornate, it seems kind of, I don't want to call it tragic, but it seems kind of sad that this beautiful cover, nobody gets to see it except those who go inside. But is it true that nobody gets to see it? I mean, when they're traveling in the wilderness, this could be, they're taking it down, they're putting it back up. Anybody's allowed to watch them put it together so they could see, oh, that's the cover of the Mishkan. That is beautiful, but we want to protect that. We want to protect that. And it goes back to the, there's a verse in Shir HaShirim, which is, Shchora Nivinava Benos Yerushalayim. Right? Ke'alei Kedar Kiriyosh Shlomo. What's Yirios Shlomo? Yirios, these curtains that we're talking about are Yirios. What are Yirios? Yirios are, curtains, and Shlomo. Shlomo is, so Shlomo doesn't have to mean Shlomo HaMelech. It doesn't have to mean Shlomo the person. Shlomo comes from the word complete as well. But the point is that, what does that mean? Shechora Nivinava means I'm black, but I am beautiful. So I'm not referring to skin color of people. It's an imagery that there is a concept that when you want to display beauty, beauty is color, right? Take a look at these windows, for example. If they were black windows, would we say that they're, and I'm not talking about skin color, I want to make that clear. Okay, if they were black windows, would we say they're beautiful windows?
No.
Most likely not. Black windows are ugly, okay? And in general, things which have color, they have pop, and they have, how much art is just, art is color, yeah. Yeah, those materials are fundamental materials for the weavings of the Mishkan. Okay, so the front cover of the Mishkan, the Masach, the entranceway, was made out of the same material, and people could all see that. That was available for anybody to see. So it's not as if these weavings were unavailable to people. It's just a question of which weavings were available for people to see.
But the point is that, as we know, when we say, how's beauty defined? Beauty is skin deep or in the eye of the beholder, or beauty is internal. And when we talk about, unfortunately, people, they tend to focus too much on the external. But as we all know, if we were to only judge people, for example, by the way that they look without getting to know them, we wouldn't have too many friends, okay? It's not an insult to anybody, but it's just the way that people perceive. But if you meet somebody, right, sometimes people say they talk over the phone and they get to know somebody really well, and then when they actually meet, it doesn't matter what they look like because they already have a connection of the heart, of the mind, of the neshama, and they say, wow, you know, nothing else really matters. And that, I think, more than anything, is the point that is being raised through all of this, that what is the definition of the Mikdash? It's the Ark, which is at the heart of this structure. What is the definition of the Mishkan? It's the cover, but it's the cover which is covered and is only visible from the inside. Those who are on the inside have the chance to say, oh, this is the Mishkan, and everybody else has to know, yes, there is beauty in there, but we cover it up because, however you want to define the reason for covering, whether it's modesty, whether it's to not flaunt, whether it's to protect, whatever it may be, but what we're understanding from the way that these words are utilized, that yes, the Mishkan, and you'll see plenty of times, you'll see that the Mishkan does refer to the overall structure of the building. Moshe puts together the Mishkan, obviously, but there's nothing which is defined as the Mishkan itself, meaning, I want to say that the other way. That the roof is defined as the Mishkan and nothing else is defined as the Mishkan except for the totality. And as we saw, by Yihyeh Mishkan Echad, that the Mishkan becomes one when those two tapestries are linked together, shows clearly that they are referred to as the Mishkan. So what we see from here is that the definition of these structures and the building is defined by its heart, the Ark, which is, of course, the Torah, and it's defined by the cover, which is protected and which is covered and is there for those who know about it and there for those who could see it from the inside. Because more important than the outside, which at times needs to be protected and needs to be covered, is what is inside. And in that way, when you go back to that original verse that we looked at, we say that, you know, you have to make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell among them. So yeah, for this building, for sure, God's presence comes down in the Mishkan. And we see that at the end of the book of Shemos, at the end of Parshas Pekudei, God's presence comes down and fills the Mishkan. Absolutely beautiful. But for the longer term lesson and the longer term message of the Mishkan and the Mikdash, we have to remember about what direction the holiness comes from, where it stems from, and how it exudes to others. So, A, on the level of the building itself, but also to the people who need to take that message of Asuli Mikdash that we all have to make for ourselves. We have to make each of ourselves into a Mikdash, and God will dwell among us. So we have to first work on the inside, the internal, and then if we are indeed becoming receptacles and vessels that exude holiness, then what's going to be on the outside will only reflect that which is in the inside. And I think that is, more than anything, the message of what these parshas are. And even though it's referring to a structure which was for a specific time and place, the message carries through for generations until today and for the many years that we should, Amir Hashem, be blessed to have on this earth. Yes, question?